Well, welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting. I'm Chris Bannon. My co-host Lex Friedman is on a yoga retreat this week and couldn't be with us. But today, our guests are from the Binge Mode podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. Its hosts Mallory Rubin and Jason Concepcion, and producer Zach Mack. And they're joining us to talk about Binge Mode and the fantastically encyclopedic podcast that they do about every single detail of every single episode of Game of Thrones. And I can't wait to dive into that because I've watched that whole series and I really am not sure I understand what's going on at this point. So I'm eager to get some expert help. I want to warn the hundreds of thousands of Wolf Den listeners that we are going to introduce some Game of Thrones spoilers here in this conversation with Mallory and Jason and Zach. So if you haven't watched through season 7, you'll just have to put this aside until you do. First, the thing that has preoccupied the three of you so profoundly for the last how many months? You did a show that attempted to help us understand Game of Thrones episode by episode through how many seasons now? Seven?
Seven
seasons. I heard, though, that you decided you needed to launch with 10 episodes per week. Is that true?
Yeah. We laid
that's
it out
crazy.
In like a binge model. Yeah.
You know that's crazy, right? 10 episodes a week? How did you do that?
So, yeah, they would come out every Monday. Every Monday correlating to the season. So, our first launch was all of like a deep dive for every episode of season one. So there's 10 episodes in each season of Game of Thrones,
right,
except for season 7. So yeah, that was the goal, was to just have it so people could listen to it all week. And then by the time they were maybe out of it, they'd get a whole new batch. But similar kind of to like how Netflix rolls out a show, but if they were to just keep giving it to you over and over.
Yeah, I think our thought process was Game of Thrones is something that inherently like lends itself to binge culture, you know, either if you're one of the few people who isn't consuming the show already, you probably have like a compulsion to try to catch up and find out what all the fuss is about, what everybody is talking about on Sunday nights. And so we knew that there would be a contingent of people out there who were going to use that, you know, month and a half, 2 months before season 7 premiered to say, I'm going to try to get in on this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, being Game of Thrones obsessives ourselves, I think we were fairly confident that there's a large chunk of the fan base out there that likes to reread the books or rewatch the show anyway, and that binge could kind of be a guide for them as they chose to dive back into that world.
And Mal and I those are the kind of people we are anyway.
Yeah.
We you know, before we were doing this, we'd rewatch the entirety of the series to lead up to the new series. We'd read the books ahead of this, like even before this was quote unquote our job. That's just the kind of fans we are of the story.
Totally. And the other thing is that just the HBO marathon schedule was also sort of in line with our publishing schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So we were hoping that people would be, you know, checking out their DVRs and checking out HBO and seeing that they were choosing to use that 6 week runway to re-air the show anyway.
So is Binge Mode a show that's, I mean, did you have to try to decide in your head this show is for people who already know a lot about Game of Thrones and ignore maybe people who are just getting into it this year? Or did you try to somehow address both audiences when you thought of, when you were beginning to put this together as an idea? Did you make a decision about whom to go for?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that heading into it in the process. Who is this for? How much do they know? How much do we want to go ahead of an episode? Do we want to acknowledge episodes that come after the episode that we're talking about? We talked a lot about that. And it evolved, I think, over the process as well.
Ultimately, we decided that when we were doing each episode, we were going to consider kind of what had taken place throughout the books and throughout the series. And there,
Zach's an expert on the books.
So we realized like a lot of people had already seen, there were 60 episodes of Game of Thrones out before we made a single episode of Binge Mode. So we found it more helpful for Mallory and Jason to kind of consider the whole series.
Yeah, like one of the things that we sort of asked ourselves as a thought experiment in the initial planning phases when we were debating this very question is, okay, let's say that we attempt to basically live fully in the moment of each Game of Thrones episode and not consider the 59 right. or 58 or, you know, right. however many that follow at that point, because you want to be basically creating a safe space for first-time Game of Thrones viewers. Okay, so what that would lead to, we realized very quickly, is us basically spending all of season one acting like we really think Ned Stark is right. the hero of the story and might live and win.
Which is right. ridiculous.
You can't do that.
It is patently ridiculous.
Right.
You can't do
that. And especially if the thing that you're really trying to bring is a depth of knowledge and exploration right. of this really vast universe, you have to consider all of it. That was really ultimately what we realized our chief goal is. And we tried to be really cognizant of issuing spoiler warnings, mm-hmm. certainly at the top of every episode, making clear for maybe first-time listeners, okay, we are going to talk about things that happen. And we did try to, like, choose our spots with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to talk about Game of Thrones without talking about Jon Snow's parents.
Right.
And by the time we started recording Binge, one of the central mysteries in the show and in the story had been answered in the season six finale. And, like, not talking about that and not accounting for that would have been pretty strange, and I think we ultimately realized would have basically artificially stifled the discussion.
Right. So let me ask you, as there are a lot of people trying to talk about Game of Thrones, you know, in the podcasting world. Did you think at all about what you could tell the audience about why your approach was distinctive? Do you feel like you had a sort of selling point internally for why we should do this show, beyond the fact that you're both, you know, charming and wonderful hosts who can carry a show?
I mean, we did think a lot about value added to the space. Like, as you said, there's a lot of Game of Thrones podcasts.
Yeah.
So what can we bring that's specifically different? And we wanted to, above all else, really just pay the adequate amount of respect to the material. And that, so that meant research, that meant just knowing our stuff. And That was really the animating principle above all else, is just to make the product a good representation of the depth and quality of the story itself.
Before we get to the process of how you made it, I'm curious, maybe I'll start with Zach on this question and ask you all to weigh in. Why do you think a show like Game of Thrones rewards a format like the binge show? What is it about Game of Thrones that really people need to turn to someone, to a show like yours, to continue to think out loud about it?
I think part of it just has to do with how big the world is, how vast the story is. There's so many characters. There's so many plot lines. There's 5 books? How many books are there?
See, so it's good you started with Zach.
Yeah. There's all these books. I've never read the books.
The expert opinion.
Great. There's all these books. There's a ton of episodes. There's so much to kind of work with and parse through that it is just an incredibly complex story. So you kind of have to work through, that. And it's really nice to have a guide in that regard. It's not like watching just a really straightforward, you know, 20-minute sitcom, or, you know, even something like Seinfeld, where it's like, okay, I get it. There's not a lot of, like, there's not a lot that's confusing me here.
There's a lot that confuses me in this show. So in the Game of Thrones, the TV series, right? So there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, and people just genuinely love it. I mean, it's kind of the only piece of monoculture we have, right? It's the thing that everyone is excited about. So people naturally just want to talk about it and go somewhere for some kind of community to collectively appreciate this thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to add to that, I mean, I think the monoculture point is key. One of our excellent young writers, Allison Herman, wrote a piece heading into season 7 saying exactly that Game of Thrones really has become the last bit of monoculture, last thing, you know, in the era of peak TV that you kind of can confidently assume the person like next to you in the grocery store or at your office is also watching.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the nature of the digital media age and the internet, there's a lot of opportunity to feel like you're a part of a community and to make yourself a part of a community. Mm-hmm. But there aren't necessarily like so many things that lend themselves to that now on a mass scale, right? It's a lot of like subcultures and, you know, your personal passion, and you can find people who share it. This is one of the rare things right now that you can treat in that way, but that a lot of other people want to treat in that way too. And that's pretty cool. And I think mm-hmm. we saw that as a real opportunity, you know. And the other thing is, Zach was saying, just the story is so vast. Like the story that George R.R. Martin has created is... It's important to remember, Jason and I always like to say this, and it's something that we always marvel at. when George wrote this story, he specifically sought out to create something that could not be adapted.
Right.
Like, that was how.
that was what he was trying to do.
Wow.
That was the scope of the saga that he wanted to create. And he has done that in many ways. The fact that HBO has been able to adapt it so successfully is really kind of a marvel.
That brings me to another question I had. Do you think season 7 has been good?
I mean, I think it's been uneven for sure. I think unevenness has been a quality of the show since it really began to move past the written material.
Mm-hmm.
That's a natural outgrowth of just an adaptation of an incredibly deep and detailed world moving into more of a natural TV space.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It ended strongly, and I think that was very important. Would I put it on par with like the best seasons of Game of Thrones? No, it was like not season 3, but it was good.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to like at this point, it's hard to make a bad Game of Thrones season. We've fallen in love with the characters like so much. There's people have really lived with these characters a long time, not just in the show, but in the books. So they just want to spend time with them.
Right. People who care about Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire as a story are so invested at this point that, you know, we were pretty critical of a couple episodes this season. I think a lot of people were. That doesn't mean that you leave the season feeling anything but like gleeful to have Game of Thrones in your life, right? I think the fact that some of the episodes this season and some of the character choices and arcs were problematic does not, you know, ultimately take away from the enjoyment of consuming the thing and participating in the conversation around it. If anything, I think it's like it's incumbent on the people who care about the story to talk about it seriously. And it is sort of a rare opportunity to kind of dissect something that isn't real, but that people care about as much as they care about things that are real. We take that part of it very seriously.
Extremely.
And it's, you know, being critical of a few choices that were made this season and loving the story are not mutually exclusive at all. And we care about it deeply and enjoy talking about
it. We've been walking around in a dead-eyed haze since it ended.
Well,
staring at each other, wondering what's missing in our lives.
Miss it deeply.
Yeah, it's an addiction, right? You are going through withdrawal at this point. Perhaps the DTs in the studio right now.
The DTs, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break right now. I need to accommodate our beloved advertisers, but we'll be back in just a second. Thursday Boot Company is a new bootstrapped, if you will, startup that started in October 2014. At the heart of the brand is this concept of Thursday. It's the day you work hard, but it's also, for many people, the unofficial start of the weekend. And all Thursday boots are made with that versatility in mind. They sell direct to the consumer, and Thursday boots are made in the same North American manufacturing facility, otherwise known as a factory in the old days. They're made in the same factories as the heritage brands that your father and your grandfather probably wore. And those boots, of course, those fancy boots, those fancy heritage boots, probably two or three times the price of Thursday boots. Thursday boots use better materials too, though, and they are really pretty simple, pretty clean styles. They let the quality of the materials shine through. With prices starting at $149 and free shipping and free returns, Thursday boots are a great buy this winter with their clean, timeless design and durability, and they'll keep you standing confident for years to come. While they don't normally do sales or discounts, this is your lucky day. If you go over to ThursdayBoots.com and you use the code FREESHIPTODAY, and let me spell that for you, it's FREESHIP2DAY, you can have a pair on your doorstep by this Thursday, and maybe on your feet by this Thursday. Okay, we're back to talk about Binge Mode, the Game of Thrones podcast with Jason and Mallory and Zach. Can I ask you a little bit about the way that the kind of commentary that you do on the show about Game of Thrones, how does that relate to the work that The Ringer does generally, starting with sports and, you know, going back to the Grantland days, but certainly now under Bill's leadership of The Ringer? How does this kind of how does your approach fit into the overall a collection of shows that you guys are doing as an organization?
Well, I think The Ringer is about obsessions. It's about the things that people are obsessed with, that the people that work there are obsessed with, whether that's football, college football, Game of Thrones, Narcos, anything. The people that work here are very passionate and super smart and really eloquent. Mm-hmm. And you want to hear them talk about the things they're crazy about. And so I think Game of Thrones fits very snugly within that philosophy.
Is there a process that you go through as a group of people? Like you sit down and say, and just go around the room, here's something I really care about and would love to talk about for 60 episodes of a podcast series?
I think it's a little more organic than that. Like, I think that there are some things that just as a company are sort of a core part of the DNA of what we do, you know, the NBA, Game of Thrones, football, various other things. Mm-hmm. Part of what is really exciting about The Ringer as a, you know, young startup is that we're still discovering what people on staff are interested in and what we want to pursue. And, you know, every day we cover new things on the site and we cover them in different ways. And that extends to the video team and the podcast network and the written word and social media and everything we're trying to do. It's one of the things about the company that I think is so energizing and invigorating for the people who work here is, like, you know, probably you're going to have an avenue for pursuing something you care about here. I think that when it came to Binge Mode in particular, obviously, we were going to put our specific, like, mark on it and think about it in the way we think about Game of Thrones as a story. But I think very much the way we approach it is in line with just kind of the fundamental approach of the company at large, which is, like, essentially expert but approachable.
Right.
You know, like, you if you're a connoisseur and you know something, whether it's Game of Thrones or something else, inside and out, you can still come to The Ringer or to Binge Mode or to anything else we do and feel engaged and entertained and informed. And if you are a novice, hopefully you'll come here and find that you really, really learned something and that the way it was discussed truly captivated you and educated you, but never in a way that was alienating or intimidating. That's really our goal across the board.
Mm-hmm. And that's a conscious balance that we really try to strike, and that's difficult. And with Game of Thrones in particular, you know, this is a fan base that's been around for 20 years now. A lot of stuff has happened. There's a lot of people that are just extremely knowledgeable about everything that's happened in the lore, in the history, everything.
Well, they're proprietary, right? I mean, there is...
Yeah, and it can be intimidating as a novice or as a person that just watches the shows or as a person who's missed a couple episodes or whatever. It's a busy life to just walk into a culture like that. It can be intimidating. And so... definitely something that we tried to do is to make it feel extremely welcoming. Come on in and let's talk about this. It's great.
Right. Conversational.
Yeah.
Well, so that brings us to how you actually made it. And Zach, I wonder if you could walk me through what the process was of getting these episodes out. You had so much work to do before the TV season arrived. How did you guys organize?
That's a good question. There was definitely a lot of, like, pre-planning meetings just to figure out what this thing was going to be and how we were going to execute it and what the overall, you know, vision was. I think once we got through that, this also coincided with Jason moving across the country. It was like, as second he arrived, we got right to work. Yeah. Jason moved from New York and it was just like, put your boxes down, like, let's get to work. And then we just got to it. I think the process itself is we would sit down and discuss kind of high level for the whole season at a time. We would kind of pick out certain themes we wanted to touch on for the season. We had all these segments for each episode, which was like we picked a winner, like who won each episode. We picked something that Jason wanted to kind of teach that kind of coincided with it went along with what was coming from, like, the books and giving a deeper explanation. So we wanted to choose those and get ahead on those so there wasn't like a more appropriate episode where he should be sharing this particular piece of history on. So we would do that kind of a season ahead at a time and just select the topics, and then that would help with the pre-planning. Then the three of us would kind of go and watch the episodes and take a ton of notes, and we created a rubric where we could kind of go into each episode, you know, looking for certain things that we knew we need to fill out for different segments.
Right.
And then we would discuss it and then we would record, you know, one at a time.
I have a feeling your fans would love to see a page or two of your preps. right? If you ever felt like you could share that with the world. I as someone who's produced and made those things, it's often interesting to see how people organize material for themselves when they're going to do a show like this. And I mean, it sounds like you had to do so much research. Mallory and Jason, how many times did you watch each episode, or did you have notes from previous viewings that you used, or how did you bring yourself back up to speed?
I mean, it's a lot of work when it's each episode, yeah. For sure. We watched them multiple times. I would say that the thing that's really interesting about the prep that we did, for me, is just that Mal and I never really had a discussion about how we were going to divide the labor. It just kind of happened. And I think that's that kind of passion for the project translated to the chemistry we had in the studio.
Yeah.
There was never a moment where it was like, okay, you do this, I'll do this. And then we'll talk about this, and then we'll divide this up, and you do this many, I'll do this many. It just was kind of like an overarching devotion to the project where we just did whatever was called upon in the moment to make each episode great.
Yeah, I think that the prep in many ways actually, and I think this is probably maybe a surprise to us, like wound up feeling like a very natural extension of the show itself,
it really
in the
did.
Sense that it was like the conversation just started early.
Yeah.
And then it continued on the episode. Like it was all for us a discussion about a thing that we love.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine a show like this working if it feels like homework, basically.
Right.
This is something we really care about, we really love, and we want to be, like as Jason said earlier, we'd be rewatching the whole season ahead of the new season anyway,
right.
Always dipping into the books, always thinking about it, talking about it. So that makes it really fun, even when it's ambitious.
Did HBO give you the episodes in advance?
No.
Oh, God, no.
Never.
So, for season seven?
Never.
So what was Sunday night like for you three? Were you each at home slacking each other while the episode was unfurling and taking notes? And that's what was Sunday night?
Well, Sunday we watched the show with Chris and Andy, with Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald for our Talk of Thrones show, which aired live on Twitter after the East Coast airing of Game of Thrones. So we do that in a room with our director and some other research staff. They were just helping us take notes and stuff. Mm-hmm. I made sure to mute Zach every weekend because so he wouldn't interfere with that. That's just a joke. But so that was the focus of our Sunday. We would just be in a room getting ready to
do
react,
another show.
to react live to X hundred thousands of people live on Twitter right after the show, which is and so that was the focus of our Sunday night,
yeah.
Primarily.
And thankfully, at that point, we had already gone through the process 60 times, so we kind of had it down by that. And dealing with one episode a week was quite a bit different than dealing with putting out 10 a week. So we had already kind of run through it enough times.
It feels to me that you could take this show and do live versions in almost every city in the country that would be a conversation on stage and a Q&A and maybe talking back to some of the clips from the show, and that you'd be able to do that for probably the next 20 years if you wanted to devote your life to that. I mean, did you think
it's
about
interesting.
The live community of people, thinking about the community you've built already?
It's an interesting question because, like as we've mentioned before, we do a lot of prep to go into it, and it's just nice to have that safety net. At the same time, I think a really important part of Binge Mode, the character in the feel of Binge Mode, is just that we love talking to each other. Like, I love talking to Mal about any subject, but this subject that we're so passionate about, there was never a moment where I'm like, man, I'm zoning out. I don't know what, like, it's like, I just can't wait to hear what she's going to say next. So I think, yeah, that is something that I think would translate to a live arena. Mm-hmm. Obviously that, you know, we'd want to prep. We want to prep. We always want to prep.
Yeah, we did a couple live shows out in LA.
Right.
We did one before the season and one before the finale as not as part of Binge
right.
Mode, but as part of Talk the Thrones.
Right.
And
so
those
Chris and Andy involved.
Chris and Andy, a couple
moderating.
Celebs.
Mm-hmm. Celebs.
Celeb guests.
Earwolf's own Jason Mantzoukas.
That's
was
right.
Oh, great.
That's right. And those were, it's a totally different experience.
Completely
like there's
different.
Something extremely gratifying and fun about it. It is really cool to hear people in the audience when you're on stage, like, shouting your, like, jokes from the podcast. That stuff's awesome. And to know that people spent their time and money to come hear you talk about a thing is, like, incredible. We'll never take it for granted. So, yeah, that is the thing that's happening.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. I think you should consider it. Honestly, I think there's a there's certainly a demand for people to come up and, you know, be able to meet you and see you in person and think out loud with each other about the show. I did want to ask you, do you feel how quickly into the making and releasing of these episodes did you sense that this show was a success? Was it right away? Did the Ringer network executives come and say, well, you only got, you know, 11 downloads today, so you're going to have to work harder tomorrow? How did you know when it was really catching on?
I remember day one, we got an email, I think, from Bill and Eric just saying, this is, like, great job with this, guys. Like, they were really, before, you know, any numbers came in or any real like, fan response, they were happy and they were excited about it. So that felt really good because
did you have a target? Did you have an audience target you were supposed to reach?
No, we didn't. We assumed a lot of people would listen just because it's Game of Thrones. It's a huge kind of phenomenon and the Ringer, you know, we do well with our podcast anyway, but we especially are known as, like, in the space as, like, we cover this thing well.
Right.
So yeah, there was no number, but again, like, the heads of our company were happy day one when the podcast launched. They were like, this is really good.
It's a real privilege for us to get to have jobs where we can make things we care about.
Yeah.
Like, well, so,
you know, that's awesome. We do not take that lightly.
Yeah. I think you're the luckiest people in America. What in the world are you going to do with all this wonderful fellowship and energy and intelligence and passion? What are you going to do next with all that? Right.
What's... Well, after your world tour idea, we're going to go look for a sponsor and pick out our tour bus. And, you know, we all work on a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Again, one of the awesome things about the company is that you're not boxed into one beat. Like, I'm the deputy editor of the site. Jason is a staff writer. Zach is working on developing and running numerous other shows. We all have a lot of stuff that we're focused on every day. So there's certainly no reality ever at our company where you're like, wow, I just have a lot of free time right now.
That never happens.
We're always doing stuff.
Right.
But cannot wait to make something.
It's true. Yeah.
I have two questions for you before I let you go. One, I want each of you to make one prediction about the next season of Game of Thrones. One thing you expect, or I will allow hope to see.
Zach, why don't you go first?
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess I just expect all of the Lannisters to die.
Mm. Mm. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have let you go first.
Yeah, that's tough.
Because I was going to say, I think I'm going to, there were, on the whole, I think we got a lot of our predictions right for season seven. The two that felt extremely confident in heading into season seven that did not happen were Jaime killing Cersei to fulfill the Valonqar portion of Cersei's book prophecy.
Correct.
And two, Cleganebowl, the Mountain and the Hound, fighting possibly to the death.
Yes.
And the fact that those did not happen in season seven does not make me think they'll never happen. It makes me more certain than ever that they're locks for season eight. I think that there are certainly other characters who could take out Cersei, but the way the groundwork that they laid, the show laid in the final episode of season seven, that scene between Cersei and Jaime gave us a lot of what we needed to inject new life into this theory, which has been like a fan favorite for quite some time. So I'm still riding hard.
Do you think that Tyrion's going to go too?
Well, a loophole in what Zach said about all the Lannisters could be whether you think Tyrion is actually a Targaryen.
Whoa. That's a deep cut that we may not have time for. Yeah. But I agree with what Mal said.
What else? I think Jon will ride Rhaegal. Jon will ride the other dragon.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I'm shipping, especially, you know, building off what Mal just said, with Jaime riding north and the final, with the break with Cersei finally occurring. I'm just, I'm shipping Jaime and Brienne of Tarth so hard.
Yes.
Yeah, I really want them I really want them to get together because that's a real relationship. That that's, you know, Brienne is the first person that Jamie really opened up to in terms of what he's been through in his life. And I think that's just a really special relationship.
All right. I have one final request, and that is, before we go, Jason, I want you to do your Lord Baelish impression, please.
What do you want me to say?
Well, I why don't you do this? Why don't you thank the listeners for tuning into The Wolf Den as
thank
Lord
Baelish?
Thank
you so much for the listeners here on The Wolf Den. Tune in to listen to this podcast. There's one thing I always like to say. I always like to ask myself, what are my listeners thinking right now? What is the worst thing they could possibly be planning?
Probably to listen to another episode, but thank you.
Listen to another episode of this show.
Is it a memorable podcast?
It's a memorable podcast.
Lord Baelish.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Jason Concepcion, Mallory Rubin, and Zach Mack for being on The Wolf Den. I think you've done a beautiful job of explaining as much as anyone can what's going on in that friggin' TV show.
It's very kind. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks,
Appreciate
Chris.
It.
Before we go, tell me where folks can find you on social media. Jason, why don't you start?
You can find me on Twitter. That's probably the best place. It's at network, NETW3RK. You can watch me talk about the Knicks mostly now that Game of Thrones is over.
Love it. I'm my Twitter handle is just at Mallory Rubin, and I will be exclusively tweeting about Manny Machado while the baseball season is underway. I hope you guys enjoy that. If you want to go to my Instagram, same handle, but just in the interest of full disclosure, it
cats,
is
cats, cats.
Only pictures of my cat.
That's beautiful.
You're welcome there, though.
I'm at Zach the Mac on Twitter, ZachTheMack, and I pretty much just tweet about podcasts and podcast industry moves when I'm not tweeting about Bench Mode.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Way to sell it.
It's big stuff.
Well, thank you all.
Larry's going to be upset.
I hope you find something new to binge on really soon and come back to deliver a new series, okay?
Do you have a request for us? What should our next binge be?
Yeah.
How about Green Acres, the seminal 1960s sitcom?
Green Acres is the place for me.
Yeah, I think there's a whole Trump Green Acres thing waiting to be talked about.
Oh, wow.
My goodness. Yeah. My goodness.
I don't know. That's just a dumb idea I had on the spur of the moment. We can talk offline. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. This has been The Wolf Den. Lex Friedman, my colleague, will be back next time with me. I want to thank Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell for producing and mixing and engineering and publishing this show. And if you want to subscribe to it, which I hope you do, you can go to earwolf.com, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts. And please, while you're there, rate, review, recommend, share, whatever the options are that those various services allow you to do. I hope you'll do that for The Wolf Den, and I hope you'll join us for the next episode. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Thursday Boot Company. They're handcrafted with the highest quality materials, and they're sold at honest prices, starting at $149, and that includes free shipping and returns. So head over to ThursdayBoots.com. That's one word, ThursdayBoots.com, and use the code FREESHIPTODAY. That's free ship, the numeral two, day, D-A-Y, F-R-E-E-S-H-I-P, number two, day, to have a pair on your doorstep and on your feet by this Thursday.
I'm H. Michael Cray.
And I'm Cuckoo Kulapilayasak, and we are the host of Who Charted, where we discuss the charts and pop culture and get to know our guests. Speaking of great guests, last week we had the wonderful Jason Manzoukas.
I'm so excited about this one. I can't wait for everybody to hear it. We had such a good time with Jason. We spoke of all his work in movie and films, and we had a great time counting down the charts.
So make sure you listen to us on Who Charted.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.